Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled The Four Immeasurables, Stepping into the World of the Bodhisattvas by Lama Adam Berner. Lama Adam talks about our potential to experience the awakened mind, the self-created habitual obscurations which cause our suffering, and the skillful means we can apply to unravel our confusion and unfold our potential. Sources include Excellent at the Beginning by Kempo Karta Rinpoche and Taking the Bodhisattva Vow by Boka Rinpoche. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good morning. I have had too much coffee this morning, and I'm feeling a little, you know, that too much coffee feeling. So I think we'll kind of welcome, and then we'll take a minute and maybe do a little bit of sitting meditation. Hopefully that'll get my too much coffee feeling to pass. So I'm sure we've all been there. So thank you all for being here today. I'm really happy to be able to give this recap sort of a teaching that Kempo Karta Rinpoche gives in his book, Excellent at the Beginning, about the four immeasurables. And as I tend to point out a lot of times when I give these talks, the purpose of this talk is to help us understand our situation, our possibilities, our potential, and how we can realize that potential. And the how is really the path, you know, and the methods we use. So these you know, talks and reading and studying and all that stuff is to help us to understand where we're at so that we can practice. So all of this stuff is really only useful insofar as it benefits our practice, you know, both on the cushion and off. So that's my aspiration in giving this talk, is that it will encourage all of our practice and, you know, get us doing the work that will actually help us to reveal our potential. So today's talk is about the four immeasurables. And I picked this topic because we have the Bodhisattva vow ceremony coming up in early July or middle July. And I'm really excited. We haven't done this in a while, and we'll, you know, we haven't done much of anything in person in a while. So this will be really cool. And I've been revisiting this book by Boka Rinpoche, Taking the Bodhisattva Vow. I think this is not, it may not be in print anymore. I know it's that a lot of these Boka Rinpoche teachings aren't available anymore, but I don't know why that is. But I've been looking into this section about being ready to take the Bodhisattva Vow, because if anyone's wondering, I want to tell you what Boka Rinpoche says. He says, I'm going to read this section from here. He says, some people hesitate to take the Bodhisattva vow, thinking that it demands qualities they lack. Their feelings of love and compassion are neither strong nor great. The wish to harm and harboring negative thoughts toward others have not left their minds. How can we know if we are ready to take the Bodhisattva vow? And then Boka Rinpoche says, if we greatly value love and compassion, if we see their benefits made apparent to us by listening to teachings, if we consider that ill will, anger, and hatred are defects, we are ready. We must take the vow. The vow helps us to improve. It will be useless for a person who has no ill will, who is good by nature, or who is not stained by conflicting emotions to take the vow. We take the vow precisely because we recognize the presence of ill will and conflicting emotions that we want to eliminate within ourselves. The more anger and aversion we see within ourselves, the more we must be determined to take the Bodhisattva vow. So I saw that this week, and I just wanted to share that because I thought that was appropriate. So today's talk sort of supports that vow, and it will help us if we've already had the vow, to help us to help hold that vow, you know, and continue to strengthen it by way of this key aspiration prayer, the aspiration prayer of the four immeasurables. And aspiration prayers are a really great practice. And there are prayers that are kind of like scripts that help us know what to say, like this one. But just making aspirations in general from our heart is also a really good practice to put into use at any point during our day. And I think after today's talk, maybe we'll have some other ideas on how to do that too. So we make aspirations, you know, broad aspirations like this to broaden our view, you know, of what's possible so that we can then grow into that, you know, because when we broaden our view of what's possible, then we see there's space that we can grow into, you know. So aspiration prayers help us to kind of widen those boundaries, those self-imposed boundaries as we start to break through them. So thinking beyond our self-imposed limitations and imagining what we're capable of as we work towards the awakened mind is kind of the idea. So aspiration prayers honor our potential, we could say. There's skillful means that help us clear away the confusion that tends to obscure that potential. So first thing we'll do today, let's say the four-line refuge prayer. And I have a slide here I can pull up. Couple things to manage here. All right, so we'll say this, the refuge prayer together. We'll say it once in Tibetan, once in English, and then once more in Tibetan. And if you know the prayer, chant along. If you don't know the prayer, you can just make the aspiration that you know, being here today and listening, contemplating the teachings, that this will be a benefit to yourself and all those that you encounter and all sentient beings in the whole universe. So let's begin. O Sangye Chidnan Suki Chodnam La Janchu Padu Dakni Kyapsu Ji Aki jin so ki pe sunam ki drola penchi sangye drupa sho. Now in English. Until I reach enlightenment, I take refuge in all the Buddhas and in the Dharma and all the noble Sangha. By the merit of accomplishing the six perfections, may I achieve Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. Once more in Tibetan. Sangye chedan suki chodnam la janchu padu dadni kyab suji dagi jin suki pe sunam ki drola penchi sangye drupa sho. Paden sawe lama rinpoche daki chivo pete ten chula Kadun chenpo go neje sun te kusun tuki ju jup sao du so. Now, as promised, let's take a minute and just kind of be in our space, and then we'll start talking. So if you know shamatha, you can focus you can place your attention on the breath. If not, just kind of just sit and listen to the sounds in the room and let the thoughts kind of pass through your mind. Don't grab onto them, just let them float through and just be for a minute. Okay, thank you. We can actually do that the whole time, and it might be more productive than me talking, but that's not what we're here for. So today I'm going to be talking about the four immeasurables, and I based this talk on Rinpoche's chapter in Excellent at the Beginning. It's called The Four Immeasurables. And Kenpo Carter Rinpoche is the founder of Columbus KTC, founder of KTCs across the country and across the hemisphere, and founder of our home monastery in Woodstock, New York, founder of, like I said, Columbus KTC, which was actually, as I understand it, the first KTC, and still going strong. And Rinpoche authored a lot of books. Dharma Paths was the first, I think, that was released. That's a great book, sort of an overview, introductory sort of book. And then so is Excellent at the Beginning. And they're both pretty different presentations, you know, and I think that usually one resonates more with people than another, because it's one of the skillful ways Rinpoche taught was, you know, to be able to deliver these overview sort of basic teachings in two kind of unique ways. And so Excellent at the Beginning is my go-to starter book. Like, I think it's fantastic, and it just really resonates for me. So this is what I went to when I thought of teaching the four immeasurables, which I thought of because of this Bodhisattva vow ceremony that we'll be doing. So I want to start by reading the prayer that we're talking about. And actually, I can put it up on the screen here too. And reading a little bit of what Rinpoche had to say as well. So here's the prayer. And it says, may all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the great happiness that is free from all suffering. May all beings experience the state of equanimity, which is free from aversion and attachment. And then Rinpoche says, this prayer and practice of the four immeasurables is really central to Mahayana Buddhism. It is central because it expresses the profound outlook of bodhicitta. We do it to develop the vast attitude of benefiting all beings and helping them reach enlightenment. So there's a lot in that first paragraph. So to go through a little bit of what is stated here, he used a couple words. I just want to make sure that we've got some background with. He said that this prayer is central to the Mahayana Buddhism. So Mahayana is one of the what we call the three vehicles in Tibetan Buddhism. And they're really like three cycles of teaching that the Buddha taught at different stages of his life. So the Hinayana is the first vehicle. It's like translated, it's like the small vehicle, or Trungpa Rinpoche called it the narrow path, because the motivation is for one's own liberation from suffering. And I think a lot of us can relate to this. I know when I came to KTC, it was because I wanted to learn to meditate, because I thought that would help me, you know, to go sit and meditate. And so I think a lot of times people end up at a Dharma center because they're suffering, you know, and that's the Hinayana approach, is to liberate oneself from suffering. And then the Mahayana, Maha is great, so it's just the greater vehicle. And so some people come to the Mahayana, some people already are, you know, maybe have that mind frame. But so the motivation for the Mahayana is to benefit all sentient beings. And then the Vajrayana is the third vehicle, which is a subset of the Mahayana, and it's particularly skillful means that act very quickly. So another name for Vajrayana is the sudden path. Like, we can in an instant recognize the nature of mind. And Columbus Karma Tegsam Choling. Tegsam is three vehicles, and Choling is Dharma place. So we teach, you know, all three vehicles in at KTC. So the next thing he mentioned here is bodhicitta. It is central because it expresses the profound outlook of bodhicitta. Bodhi is awakening and citta is mind. So we're talking about the mind of awakening. And it's you hear it spoken of sort of in different ways. You know, it is this mind of awakening, but it's also like a motivation. You know, it's the bodhicitta motivation. It's the Mahayana motivation to benefit all beings, you know, is related to bodhicitta, because the actual meaning of bodhicitta, as explained in the jewel ornament, is may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. And this is sometimes that gets summed up just as wishing to benefit others, and that's not incorrect, but the idea is that we need to attain Buddhahood because that's how we'll be most effective at benefiting others, you know, through clearing away our own confusion and realizing our own potential. That's how we are best able to help other beings. And that's also why when we get on the cushion in the morning to do our practice, we're benefiting others. You know, we're clearing away our own confusion and learning, you know, more about ourselves so that we can more effectively engage with the world and benefit others. So that bodhicitta aspiration is really to attain, that we can attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. And then the next paragraph that Rinpoche says is, as we have discussed, each one of us without exception has the potential to experience the awakened mind. And each one of us also has habitual obscurations. These habitual obscurations, which are self-created, are the causes of our suffering. Once we understand our potential and our shortcomings, we need to apply skillful means in order to unravel our habits of confusion and unfold our potential. And there's three things he's hitting here that are the three topics that I really want to hit today, which are this potential to experience the awakened mind, habitual obscurations that obscure that potential, and the skillful means that can clear away the confusion and the habitual obscurations. Confusion, habitual obscurations, same thing. So this potential is Buddha potential. You know, it's this innate goodness, this innate potential for limitless love, compassion, joy, equanimity, that we all have within us. That's an assumption, you know, a basic assumption in Buddhist thought, is that we all have this potential. It's not something we need to go out and acquire. It's not something that some people have more of than another. We all have it. It's just obscured. And those obscurations, as Rinpoche says here, are habitual. And so obscurations hide things, right? So they're like kind of covering over or hiding this potential. And these obscurations a lot of times appear to be who we are. You know, we take the obscurations to be like what we're capable of and who we are, and we have to react to them and things like that. They're kind of like if you had only seen a cloudy sky and somebody told you there was a sun there, if you hadn't seen it, you might not believe it, you know, but we know that behind the clouds, there's the sun, you know, and it's just the clouds happen to be in front of the sun. So these obscurations similarly are not what's really there. You know, like once we clear them away, we see the sun. And similarly, once we clear away our obscurations, we realize our potential. There's nothing more to be done but to clear away, you know, those things. It's already there. And then habitual obscurations is what he said. So thinking about habits, habits we don't often notice, you know, like a lot of the things we do that are habitual, they just seemingly automatically occur. A lot of times people around us may notice them more than we notice them, but so our obscurations just kind of happen. We kind of churn them out because we've done them so often we don't even notice, you know. So that's the case with our habitual obscurations. And another thing to think about with habits is when we do know about them, you know, habits that we want to change, we often think, how could I do without them? That's something, you know, any bad habit that people have that they want to break, they confront that at some point, you know, like, how can I exist without these habits? You know, there's some feeling that those habits define us, you know? And so that's important to know when we talk about habitual obscurations, is like, we can know about them and still kind of feel like, you know, at least in some part of our mind, that like maybe we just can't live without them, you know, but we most certainly can, you know, and the more we're aware of that, the better. And so there's, you know, there's great stories about People kicking habits. People kick habits all the time, you know, and it's very inspiring. So we can do that too in the biggest and most important ways, you know. And then habits can also refer to karma and our tendencies. So habitual obscurations are habitual because they've happened before. And when we do something, it's easier to do it again. And we kind of make a rhythm of doing the same thing over and over. And that's one way of talking about karma too. So our habitual obscurations are obscure our potential. And a lot of times they arise without us even knowing that they're there. If we do know they're there, we may not really realize that we can get rid of them. And so that's habitual obscurations. And then he also says here that they're self-created, which, you know, we create these obscurations. We may not realize that we've been doing it for a long time, but we create them. These limitations, the sense of limitation of what we're capable of, or what we can do, what we can withstand, things like that. We sort of make up these obscurations and then we believe them, which if you're involved in Lojong at all, there's a Lojong slogan that is be a child of illusion. And the footnote for that one says be a sorcerer is one of the translations for that. And that's really cool because it's this idea that sorcerers create illusions, but they realize they've created an illusion and they're not like threatened by it or beholden to it because they know it's their own creation, you know? So we can, even if we're not able at this point to just magically clear away all of our illusions, we can be aware that we're creating them. You know, we can start to become aware of that and contemplate that and notice it. So again, if we can't overcome them right now, it's good to begin to recognize them. And, so we need skillful means to unravel these habits, though, to unfold our potential that's already there. We need to clear away these habitual obscurations with skillful means. And so that's kind of what we're going to talk about today with the four immeasurables. So before we get into the first one, immeasurable in this context means, Seimei is the Tibetan word, and that means se is measure, and mei is a negating particle. So it means without or not. So seimei is without measure. And what we mean by that is we're cultivating immeasurable, there's four of these. So loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, or bliss, sometimes it's called an equanimity. So we know that sentient beings are immeasurable, uncountable, you know, like we cannot put a number on how many beings there are. They're immeasurable. So if we're going to practice extending our compassion to all of those beings, that immeasurable number of beings, that's an immeasurable amount of compassion. So that's why we call these the four immeasurables. And the first of these, may all beings have happiness in the causes of happiness. So what we're translating here as loving kindness, that's generally what we call this. We're cultivating loving kindness when we make this wish for all beings to be happy. That Tibetan word is jampa. And Rinpoche says it means being sensitive to the well-being of others or wanting others to be happy. And it's a capability that we all already have, a version of it, you know. We all know what it's like to particularly to be concerned about our own happiness. And we also experience it for other people, too. We want other people to be happy. But the problem is we misuse it, and it gets tainted by our own egoistic clinging, our clinging to self. And this is what creates all manner of pain and suffering, Rinpoche says. It's kind of like we're creating territories. We know all beings want happiness. If we think about it, and we should think about it, we know that all beings have a desire, you know, not to suffer, to be happy, to have happiness. And in that way, we're all alike. In that way, all beings are equal. And everybody wants to be happy. But we kind of limit our wish for the well-being of others based on how their happiness relates to us. So that starts with I and me, and then it extends out to my in terms of like my family, my friends, We sort of draw these lines of who's connected to us and who's not. And then for those who are outside our territory, we might, you know, if they have well-being, we might get jealous. We may not, it may irritate us when they have success. And for those inside our territory, it's actually not a whole lot better, because when our loving kindness is based on how people relate to us, how they make us feel, Rinpoche says it's shaky. It's not dependable. These people in our circle, you know, who we purport to care about their happiness or not, they really can't trust our loving kindness, because it's based on how it makes us feel. It's based on selfishness. And this is a good point to remind ourselves about the Four Noble Truths, which is always a good thing to kind of look for and think about. So the Four Noble Truths is the first teaching the Buddha gave. It's a Hinayana teaching. And what the Buddha said is that the four truths are the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, the truth of cessation of suffering, and the truth of the path. So what he said is that our experience contains suffering, that suffering has a cause, and that cause is selfishness or attachment to the self in particular, but really attachment of any kind, but it all radiates from this attachment to the self. So suffering is a part of our lives. It has a cause. Because it has a cause, if we take the cause away, we take away the suffering. And that's the third noble truth, the cessation of suffering. And then the fourth noble truth is that there's a path. In other words, there are skillful means to achieve the cessation of suffering. So there's a lot of takeaways from that. It's super profound. It's something to contemplate all the time. But right now, I'm bringing it up because of attachment and selfishness. Like, we know that the Buddha said that suffering is caused by attachment. So, and that's what we're talking about here, is this loving kindness that's tainted by clinging to the self. We need to recognize that that kind of loving kindness is unstable, and we have to become less preoccupied with our own selfishness in order to realize true immeasurable loving kindness. And then zooming out, we have to remember that, like, not only do we all long for happiness, but we're all making the same mistakes in trying to find it. You know, we're all, our wish for others to be happy is tainted by this egoistic clinging. It's not just us, it's everybody. So Rinpoche says, even when people perform harmful, self-destructive actions, they do so with the thought that such activities could make things better. Based on this understanding, we should be concerned for the well-being of others, not because they are our friends or family members, or because they have done things that are kind for us or might in the future, but because we all share this fundamental situation. This is not based on any prejudice or bias, but is rooted in the reality of sentient beings' experience. If we come to terms with this understanding, how could we not be moved by concern for others' well-being? This genuine and heartfelt concern for the well-being of others is proper loving kindness. So as we said, that selfishness is a cause of suffering. And so if our loving kindness for others is based on selfishness, it's going to be a cause of our own suffering, and then probably a cause for others' suffering too. So, and that's, I mean, it would be funny if it wasn't sad. You know, like, it's unfortunate that we're all in that situation. And, you know, Rinpoche points out here that, you know, even when people are doing destructive actions, they're doing it because somehow they think it's going to make it better for them. There's somehow that's going to get them happiness. And we're all in that boat together. So, and that's a real reason to give rise to, you know, proper loving kindness. So the next thing Rinpoche says is he reminds us that anyone can develop this unconditioned loving kindness. Anytime that we feel thoughts of wishing for the well-being of others, even just for one individual, for ourselves, you know, or for one other person, he points out that we can expand that thought to include all individuals. We have the freedom to do that. It's kind of surprising, but it's a lot easier than we think in the moment of noticing a wish for others' well-being, to expand that out and just include all beings. It may take some work to, it will take some work to stabilize that into your just, so it just kind of, so that becomes habit. And that's the idea here is, right, is clearing away these habitual obscurations so our potential can shine through. So part of doing that is working with new habits that are useful, you know? So one of them is when we have these wishes for our own happiness or for the benefit of others, we just make the choice to include all beings in that. And so when we notice a thought of loving kindness for one, we consciously include all. And that's in itself a great practice. And you know, why would we want to contemplate, or why would we want to bring about unconditioned loving kindness? In particular, Rinpoche says that it frees us from envy and jealousy. How so? Well, when we genuinely wish for the happiness for all beings, there's no object of jealousy that remains. When we want everyone to be happy, Rinpoche says there's no one you don't want to have happiness and goodness. So there's no object for on which to place one's jealousy. And he points out that we really have to contemplate this, that a jealous thought cannot exist with genuine loving kindness. And he makes the point of saying we have to contemplate this, because I think a lot of, you know, nuggets of wisdom like this, it's easy to sort of just buy into it, go, oh yeah, that's right, and then move on. But Rinpoche encourages us to contemplate this idea, you know, to examine that with immeasurable loving kindness, with loving kindness applied to all beings, jealousy cannot exist. So to examine this for ourselves is important so we can have a genuine experience of its truth. And then Rinpoche said something in here that I did not get for the first 10 or 20 reads. And so I want to take a minute for all of us to think about this one. And then I'll tell you where I landed with it. And you may be in a different place, but let's talk about it. So Rinpoche said, most of the problems and suffering in our lives, whether local or global, personal or interpersonal, are caused by this pattern of jealousy. So one more time, most of the problems and suffering in our lives, whether local or global, personal or interpersonal, are caused by this pattern of jealousy. So do you think that's true? Take a minute and just think about it. So you may have gotten it right away. I didn't. I think the reason was because I thought, like, I don't think I'm particularly jealous of people. Like, that's not a emotion that I think arises for me often. And where I landed with this, I can't say that this is exactly what he meant, but this is kind of what occurred to me is I started to think about not in terms of just being upset that someone else is happy, but in terms of the comparison. And how it may not be that I consciously have ill will towards a person who has good fortune, but I may very well feel ill will towards myself because I don't have what they have. You know, so this comparison becomes a source of suffering because of the self-other dichotomy, because of clinging to the attachment, you know, clinging to the self here. I'm actually like myself injured because this other person doesn't have it. So jealousy seems to me to kind of manifest in two aspects, you know, with one, the other, or both being noticeable. Either I'm most upset that someone else is happy, you know, obviously exhibiting ill will towards them, or someone else's happiness just makes me feel bad because I don't have what they have, which is not like obviously ill will towards the other person. But it's not goodwill. or maybe we are lucky enough to notice both aspects of that. And I guess these are kind of the same thing in a way, but it was useful for me to contemplate this a bit, like how jealousy manifests for me, you know, and we may not like this, when it's happening, you know, but we tend to think we don't have any control over it, of those feelings of jealousy and maybe comparison and clinging to the self in those situations. But habit, you know, as strong as habits like jealousy are, they are learned, and we do acquire them, and we reinforce them every time we indulge them. But as is taught, you know, that's not our nature. That's not our inherent nature. So we need to contemplate things like this so that we can understand that jealous patterns, you know, are not our true nature. In doing so, we remind ourselves of that potential for liberation from these patterns. You know, it gives us motivation to work to clear away the obscurations that hide our potential. And Boucher says here too, any small effort, any continuous attempt we make towards freeing ourselves from these habitual tendencies will amount to some definite beneficial effect as long as our attempts are based on the right understanding, the right view, and the right approach. The right understanding is the practice of having concern for the well-being of all beings again and again, and to see the wisdom of this. We do this practice not just because it is a nice thought, but because ultimately it is very profound and beneficial. Applying this understanding is the beginning of training the mind. And he goes on to say that the four immeasurables are not just like philosophical. They need to become a heartfelt experience. And the effect of that is a greater sense of openness, connection, and he even says like physical well-being. The world is a much happier place when we're happy, when others are happy. If we want happiness and we're only looking for it, looking for our own moments of happiness, only the ones that are expressly our own do we take a moment to rejoice in. We're missing out on a wealth of other opportunities to be happy, because we can be happy when anyone is happy, like anyone we see is having good fortune. That can be a cause for our own genuine happiness, you know? And so we need to watch for these kind of things. We need to watch for how often we react to others' happiness, worst case scenario, with disdain, you know, but even with some apathy, you know, like we can embrace these opportunities to be happy for other people. We can tweak our thinking a bit, you know, we can be happy for anybody. And I encourage you to see how that feels, you know, give it a shot. Like, I think I don't remember all the time, but I'm glad when I do, because it does really help. So it's a great way to enrich one's experience. And so our habitual patterns of self-clinging will challenge us, though, but we have to persevere. We have to be mindful of selfishness arising. We have to be mindful of our tendency to think of ourselves as the center of any situation, because it is this attachment that is the cause of our own suffering, and in turn, the suffering of those around us. So Rinpoche, this is maybe the most profound thing I think in here. He says, seemingly external problems are not as serious as self-created problems. And so this is where we should put most of our attention. So that's something to think about. So in Mahayana Buddhism, we train by repeating words of aspiration over and over, such as, may all sentient beings have happiness and the cause of happiness. And specifically, this refers to temporary happiness right now, but also accumulating the cause of happiness in the future. And we're kind of talking about karma in a given moment, because like we want people right now not to be suffering. They're suffering now, you know, and their situation right now is the result of previous actions. So we want them right now not to suffer. But we also, whatever they're encountering right now, we don't want them to be creating more causes of future suffering. We want them to create the causes of happiness now for their future happiness. So that's why we say the causes of happiness in the, that's why we make the wish for them to be happy and have the causes of happiness. So that's the first one, loving kindness. And it, when understood, Rinpoche says it leads easily to the second. They're not really different. It's just a matter of focus. And he says, if we don't understand the first one, we're not really going to understand the others. So moving on to the next one, which is, may all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. So this has to do with cultivating compassion. And so what is compassion? Compassion is the wish for others to be free of suffering. So with the first one, loving kindness, the wish for others to be happy. The second one, compassion, the wish for others to be free of suffering. So just like with loving kindness, if we first can think about compassion, then we can think about limitless compassion, because we have some experience of compassion. We all have it, except it tends to also be twisted by self-cherishing, like loving kindness. So we all have some experience of not wanting to suffer and not wanting people maybe close to us to suffer, but it's twisted by our self-cherishing, and we really only want it for people who are close to us. And for them, it's dependent on how they treat us. You know, it's because of particular behavior, you know, from them, or material gifts from them, you know, that make us want to be compassionate towards them. And that's problematic. You know, limitless compassion needs to come from a recognition that all beings want to be free of suffering, just like us. And beings are limitless, so our compassion must be limitless too. And that's like with loving kindness. You know, all beings want to be happy. Similarly, all beings want to be free of suffering, just like us. But we all are making this mistake of clinging to the self. Similarly, the way that manifests could be drastically different between people, but the root issue is the same. And so, since all beings are in that state, we have to develop compassion for all of them. And in this section, Rinpoche points out that hatred and aggression, in particular, are causes of our pain and suffering. And to that point, he says, suffering and pain are created by hatred and aggression in their various aspects: anger, resentment, rejection, grudges. All of these inflict suffering in our own lives or in the lives of others, both relatively and ultimately. While we are in a state of anger and hatred, we experience pain, and the consequences of our aggression will be a further experience of confusion, which leads to even more pain and suffering. By contrast, the attitude of compassion has no aggression or hatred and no intention to harm others. Again, there is actually no object of aggression and no object of hatred if there is no one whom we want to suffer. So, you know, we talked a lot about the first. We're going to talk a little bit less about the second, because there's a lot in common with that first one. You know, if we are able to have this wish for, you know, for no being to suffer, we don't want anyone to suffer, then there's no object for our aggression. And we also need to think that our limitless compassion brings freedom from suffering, not only in the present, but also in the future. It's both a cause for our current freedom from suffering, but also it creates the causes of us being free of suffering in the future. And Rinpoche says that as part of training our minds, we need to recognize the profundity of this. And he actually says here that profundity in Dharmic terms means how beneficial it is, not how fascinating or glamorous. So we need to think about this stuff. You know, like, I hope this is stuff that we contemplate, you know, after today, you know, this afternoon and during the week and henceforth. You know, these are things that we need to really start to realize and come to a genuine understanding in our own mind. We can question these ideas in order to think them through. So, for instance, normally we believe that aggression comes from external circumstances. And Rinpoche addresses that. He says, we think that the object of aggression is out there. However, we have no control over external circumstances. Also, no external circumstance is completely real or reliable, because the nature of external circumstances is transitory, and also because all circumstances are interdependent. If we depend on external circumstances, thinking that by getting rid of one object of aggression, we have somehow gotten rid of our aggression, in fact, we have not. We can look to our lives for examples of this, because this is what we have tried to do all along. We look outwardly and say to ourselves, here are the objects of hatred and aggression, and we try to destroy them. But have we become free of aggression and hatred? Have we become free of the suffering that results from such patterns of mind? I think no. So in this prayer, we're asking that that all beings are free of suffering now, and the causes of future suffering as well. And he talks about the causes of suffering as the three poisons: attachment, aggression, and ignorance. As long as we operate based on these three poisons, we will suffer. So when we say, may all beings be free of suffering and the causes, we are asking that they be free of conflicting patterns of mind, and in particular, the three poisons. So that's the first two. The third one is, may all beings never be separate from the highest bliss, which is without suffering. And so this one we call joy. Joy or bliss, highest bliss. I think in the book, actually, the translation, I tried to pick one that would fit on the screen. So the translation that's actually in the book here is, may all beings never be separated from the great happiness that is free from all suffering. And I think this one is a point of confusion for a lot of people, because they think, didn't we already talk about happiness and suffering in the first two? How is this one different, right? But what we're really talking about here is not only with like immediate well-being and freedom from suffering, but this one addresses having a vision for all beings to know the ultimate experience of awakened mind, like for all beings to know the true nature of mind, which it said is beyond duality, you know. So the supreme unsurpassable joy is this experience of awakened mind. And it's not an easy thing to get our heads around. In fact, it's a thing we won't get our heads around until we are enlightened. So what we're talking about is this experience of awakened mind, like having this aspiration that all beings can experience that. This is what we mean by unsurpassable joy or highest bliss, because we are experiencing confusion now, you know, but we want all beings to realize their potential to experience awakened mind. So we want all beings to experience more than just relative happiness and freedom from suffering. We want them to have this experience of the fruition, you know, of fully clearing away all confusion and fully actualizing our potential. So that's what we're talking about with joy. And I don't have a whole lot to say about that one, because, like I said, it is, I mean, we're talking about enlightened mind here, you know, so there's not a whole lot to say about that one, really, in this context. So then the fourth line is, may all beings rest in great equanimity, free from attachment and aversion, which is basically what the translation in the book says as well. So equanimity is freedom from attachment and aversion. If we are able to be free of fixation on the self and on phenomena, then we can have loving kindness and compassion equally towards all beings. In other words, when we are not fixated on I and me and mine, in these territories that we have self-created, the boundaries that we put some people inside and other people outside, when we can let all those go, equanimity is the natural state. It's how things really are. So the great equanimity is the fruition of the first three of the four immeasurables and is the ultimate and absolute experience of awakened mind. So in a way, talking about joy is talking about this ultimate experience of awakened mind, and equanimity is the relative experience of awakened mind. This equanimity. So to wrap up, the four immeasurables, Rinpoche says, describes them here as the very heart of the Mahayana teachings. And he really makes a point here as he wraps this chapter up to say that we must make an effort to integrate and understand these teachings, to think about them, but more importantly, to do them. You know, to try to apply them, to really put them to use. And although we are busy in the modern world, so many distractions and responsibilities, we've got to make some effort. And he says, regarding the effort, we must make some effort either through formal practice or through mindfulness. If we know exactly what to do, but feel we cannot carry out what we know, This is because there has not yet been a proper process of mind training. And I think we probably all have felt that way after hearing some teachings, or reading some books. And I'll read it again, the key sentence here. If we know exactly what to do, but we feel that we cannot carry out what we know, this is because there has not yet been a proper process of mind training. And so the quality of our practice, you know, making it proper is kind of the most important thing. And he goes on to say that, a little bit of quality practice goes a long way, whereas even a whole lot of low quality practice may not amount to much at all. So how we know that things are quality, how we know whether we're doing things properly is the four immeasurables. That's how we ensure quality practice done properly. We can ensure the quality of our practice by applying the aspiration of the four immeasurables to it. Because he also goes on to say that how little, you know, virtuous activity we actually may do during our day, consciously virtuous activity, we can incorporate the four immeasurables into anything we're doing. You know, we should work with this motivation. And when we start things and when we finish things, just a simple dedication works even, he said. So applying this aspiration throughout our day, both in our formal practice and just in our day-to-day life, can really transform things into virtuous activities. And in particular, it can ensure that we are doing the practices we're doing properly with the proper motivation. So dedicating the merit in general is just an application of the four immeasurables, you know? In all these cases, we're joining our practice with the proper motivation, and that's the idea here. So that's my talk. Looking at the comments real quick. So if anyone has any questions, I have time. We have some time for questions, and I really appreciate you all being here and listening. And I'll say, since I'm waiting and if anybody's typing, that we are still rebuilding the center and we are still raising funds. And here is where, if you are so inclined, you can donate to support the building of our new temple, a place of kindness and tranquility in the middle of the city. It's a wonderful place, as a lot of you know. It'd be nice to have a physical place again that we can all meet together. And so many people have gone in and out of those doors, learning meditation and compassion and training and finding support. And once again, we'll have a home where we can all be there and do that. So if you want to take part, you know, any donation you can make helps, you know, and you can share in the merit and you can rejoice in the good merit of all the people who have donated. You know, we can be happy for their happiness, right? So somebody asked for the cover of the book. This is excellent at the beginning, Discovering the Buddhist Way by Kempo Carter Rinpoche. And thank you, Helder. And I was going to show this is, I always have a picture of Rinpoche nearby when I'm giving a talk. And so this is the one I had today. I love this shot, the 16th Karmapa and Kempo Carter Rinpoche and a snake, a very lucky snake coming in contact with the body mandala of Kempo Carter Rinpoche and the 16th Karmapa. Lucky, lucky snake. So if, thank you. It's just restream. Thank you. But yeah, definitely. So in order to wrap up, I think I'll just say that I appreciate everybody. I confess any errors I may have made in this teaching, any errors and mistakes that I made were entirely my own. And I confess them and rejoice in all the good works of all of our teachers and all of your practice. And I pray that all of our teachers remain for a long, long time and that they continue to teach. And we dedicate all this merit for the benefit of sentient beings. And I'm going to put on screen the dedication prayer and we can recite it together. By this merit, may we obtain the omniscience of Buddhahood and defeat our common enemy, wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, may we free all beings. Okay, thank you, everybody. This was a lot of fun. I really appreciate it. Hope you all have a great Sunday, and we'll see you all soon. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.